wanted to add
Charlie,
something to the last chapter.
Yeah, if the last chapter we're dealing with was the project coordinator for a pre-production studio that was headed by Buzz Grissinger, I believe, and Stu Fry, who's now one of our VPs today, was...
This is Stuart Fry, R-E-Y.
Right.
Yeah. The younger brother of Donald.
Donald Fry, correct. Stu and I had worked at Continental Mark II. In fact, it was probably one of Stu's jobs.
Really?
Was Continental Mark II.
Uh-huh.
And if I remember right, he was an engineer on the board there, and he was as well as an engineer on the board when he worked in the project studio with Buzz Grissinger.
Mm.
In fact, I believe that as Stu was touting at that time, the Uniside.
What was it? What was that?
And the Uniside is what we use today, where the T-Bird and the Taurus and Sable, where the body openings are all stamped in one large piece of steel,
mm-hmm.
welded to the outside of the floor pan,
yeah.
and to control door openings
oh.
and fit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was...
Was that rather advanced for its time?
Yeah, well, it took Stu all the time from, I'd say, about 1961 to 1984 to get it into production. So if we can credit him with all of that.
Good. That's good. Well, that seems to take us up to the, you're assuming the design managership of the, something called the Interior Design Office in 1967. What was that?
Interior design, that was an advanced studio.
Was it?
For
whose idea was it to set it up, or had it been there?
It had been set up. In fact, the most of the studios at the time had pre-production studios.
Oh, okay.
The Ford studio had a pre-production studio. The Mercury studio had a pre-production studio.
Mm-hmm.
The Lincoln studio, I think they were combined
uh-huh.
in pre-production work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the designers could more or less feel a little freer than you could in the production studio
mm-hmm.
by doing advanced concepts, and we did a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing self-skinning urethane seats at that time.
Self-skinning?
Yes.
S-K-I-N-N-I-N-G? What does that mean?
Well, it means like this vinyl chair
mm-hmm.
or any seat could be molded, and rather than have it covered with the material sewn afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
As they pour it into the mold, it forms a skin of varying thicknesses,
mm-hmm.
which could be controlled,
mm-hmm.
and you get a finished product out of a mold
uh-huh.
that is soft. And the foam underneath, it was two-stage pouring where you could pour the skin and then pour the foam inside of the skin.
Mm.
So we had several seats built that way. It's done today on tractor seats, inexpensive furniture, a number of things.
Mm-hmm.
That type of concept.
Yeah.
But we were trying to bring it into the automotive area,
mm-hmm.
and we were just a little ahead of our time. But nevertheless, it takes that type of thinking
mm-hmm.
to ever right. get a product near.
So you were able to work on futuristic products without budget restraint and without production budget restraint.
Correct.
Sort of soar off into the any other products that come to mind that stay with you?
We had reams of instrument panels and various shows.
New configurations?
New configurations, center stacks, radio cockpit controls that were completely encased by the driver. Mm-hmm. At that time, we had even built probably the first station wagon with a carousel seat in the rear.
Really?
As a station wagon arrangement. Mm-hmm. With a TV set for a monitor out of the rear window and a screen in the instrument piano.
Really?
We were playing with digital readouts and liquid crystal displays. And,
mm-hmm.
and here we are,
there you are. You
20 years later.
Standing, finally.
Right.
Why'd it take so long?
I believe we're just a little faster than the industry. Yeah, our thinking
well,
is
I mean,
much
why,
further.
Why is the industry so conservative? 20 years to get digital readouts, that's incredible.
Well, let's say the space program.
Oh, good. Yeah,
it really.
Did, didn't
it? Yeah.
Otherwise,
because what we were doing, we were dreaming out in the future. And all designers have these dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And we project ourselves a little bit further than what the present technology is. But we were building...
We were truly avant-garde thinkers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And designers are doing that today. Also.
Yeah.
We just push the state of the art beyond itself.
Yeah. Which benefit would be very helpful, I think, to students of automotive design, if you could give us a detailed look at your work with the Ford Mustang in the early 60s, the concept, the development, and the final realization of that very successful design project when you were with the Ford and Corporate Project Studios as head designers. Could you detail some of your experiences in that really incredible project that it turned out? Probably didn't seem so at the time, but in retrospect, it's quite a story.
Right. Well, at the time, there were several cars being bannered about that were being produced by the advanced areas of the studios and
mm-hmm.
other studios contributing to this project. The project really was that they wanted another vehicle created off the Falcon chassis.
Ah, that was it, huh? Uh-huh.
So, using the Falcon hardware, and the Falcon at that time was falling off in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it had been
there
fabulous.
He had two or three presentations
mm-hmm.
of various candidates for this new vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And each show they would shoot them right out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come back in with negative results. And at the time I really don't recall what the project was, but Joe Orris came in and gave us a show date, which was about 10 days off.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, I could correct myself there. We were doing studies. We were doing paper studies. And we were doing full-size layouts for a sportier car using the Falcon running gear. And I had the entire walls of the studios covered with full-size drawings.
Joe Orris had been the head...
He was the executive of the studio at the time.
Right.
The production studio
mm-hmm.
and the advanced studio, which I was the manager in the advanced studio.
Right. Yeah.
We were given the go-ahead to start the model. And it took us 10 days because Joe wasn't getting what he wanted, or they weren't ringing anybody's bell, really.
Mm-hmm.
And
what sort of realizations would these be? Would these be not models? They'd be
Now, they had three or four models.
They did.
Three or four shows well before this particular Mustang was shown.
Oh, okay, and he hadn't liked any of them.
No one had liked any of them.
Good.
They were various concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Some were good, some were bad.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we got into it, we had a very short period of time to do it. We picked one design, and we started the model, I believe, on a Friday. We worked through Saturday, and 10 days later, we had a completed model that we had dynocked at that time. I think it was paint, really. We had painted the model white.
White,
and the early photographs depict this.
In was fact, it deliberate?
It was deliberate on my part because of the fact that we didn't have time really to develop the surfaces
mm-hmm.
of the model as fine as we always do.
Uh-huh.
And if we did have any rough areas, white doesn't show bad surfaces. Dark colors show bad surfaces. And I really forget that they had blue ones, silver ones, and it was so startling to come out with a model in white that I think that shocked them. It got everybody's attention.
Like who? Who was at the show?
If I remember correctly.
Iacocca.
And whether or not it was Mr. Ford, I don't really recall.
He was in and out.
All right, he was in and out all the time. But we came back in with the bell there. And it's really, most of the times your first shot at a design is your best. The more you work on it, or the more people get into it
yes.
for you,
yeah.
the more
somebody ruins it. Yeah.
Right. So the model went immediately from the advanced studio into the production studio after that first show. And it was developed by Gail Halderman.
Uh-huh.
He did the feasibility on the model.
Did he?
And he gets 90% of the credit for it. And he got promoted.
Oh my gosh. You guys were left behind.
Yeah. But that's the way the cookie crumbles.
What's the difference between a working model and a feasibility model?
The working model or design model,
yeah,
as we call it, may not have all the feasibility, like maybe the sheet metal is in too far where it goes through some particular structure, or the bumper doesn't have enough clearance to the sheet metal.
So all Halderman was doing was finishing off engineering terms.
Right.
But he had nothing to do with the design, basically.
No. But nevertheless, that's where you get the credit, is when the thing goes out
the door. They say, who did that? They say, well,
right.
last guy worked on it.
It was
well, that's good.
Now, Gail is my boss today.
Oh, yeah, nice guy. And
right.
I'm sure he deserves all the credit he gets. But
sure.
I think you're the first to say that the guys who really did the work behind the lines really never get the credit.
Well, they do. In my particular case, they did not. With that particular case.
You're always mentioned in the stories and the books they do on the
But they always wonder, who the hell is that guy? That's Joe Orris did it, or else Iacocca did it.
Yeah, right, or Stu Fry did it.
Right. Somebody always did it.
Or not even Don Fry.
Right.
And Iacocca still reveres his title as the father of the Mustang.
Right.
Halderman has been given credit in certain periodicals.
Yeah.
You guys, you just get a mention in the histories, and they don't realize you did all the creative work.
Yeah. Well, each particular phase, and it's true, could be dropped at each one of those phases.
Who else was on your media group on that?
George Shoemaker.
Shoemaker. Okay.
Yeah, George is still at Ford Motor Company.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Is he as a master?
No, George heads up our graphics group upstairs.
Does he?
Yeah, George was put on a shelf also. Right. Max Kruger was the layout man or the engineer in the studio at the time.
K-R-E-U.
G-E-R, yeah. He's passed away since.
Uh-huh.
And at that time we had 6 designers, and I'll be darned if I can recall the rest of them.
Yeah.
But I could.
Yeah, those two guys
later,
were keepers.
They were keepers now.
Yeah.
George really came up with the concept of the front end, the high mouth.
Mm-hmm. You cribbed that from somewhere, hadn't you? Or someone said you did.
Well, really, the whole design itself was really, if you look at the thing, and perhaps I'm the only one that sees it,
mm-hmm.
but it's really a little Mark II in profile because it is a long hood.
Yeah.
And a short body.
Is it really?
Right. And that's really what I was striving for.
Well, that was the inspiration.
Right. Mm-hmm. Haven't worked on a Continental Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
Could steal a little bit of that.
Sure.
And the car was extremely successful.
Yes.
And I think people like it today simply because of its proportions, I think.
Right.
You know.
64s are in great demand.
Right. It was an interesting project.
Well, it took off.
Very inspiring.
So once the feasibility model was made, what happened to it then?
Well, the feasibility model is really what happens to a model is that the design is done in 3D, which is clay. Then we release the surface off it, and at that particular time, they would cut templates all the way through the model. Today we use a computer. And we use it, and we can draw it up from points. But when you release the surface to engineering, engineering will take any other holes out of it that we had in the surface. In other words, make the model feasible so it can be made out of metal, drawn in a die, welded, put together, and that is the release of the model. Right there. When all that work is done.
Where is that done? What shop is that done in?
Body Engineering does that work today.
Mm-hmm.
In our time, at that particular time, we had the surface layout group that was a part of engineering that worked in our building.
Yeah, right.
Right there. So they were closer to the model. When they wanted templates or surfaces explained to them, they were right in the building, and they came into the studio, and we would solve our problems together. So we do that today, only it's computerized.
Yeah, good. Much faster.
Right.
So once the go-ahead was given, then the manufacturing took over.
Yeah, well that's the kickoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it debuted at the New York World's Fair, didn't it?
Probably was. I really don't recall.
64.
Yeah.
Summer 64.
Yeah. They had so much ballyhoo over it that we never got into that end of the business.
Uh-huh.
We were busy working.
You were on to the next project.
Right, we were
long
on to the
gone.
Next project.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It was just another project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised at its success, looking back?
Yes, because really, at that time...
It was just a Falcon spinoff, wasn't it?
Right.
With a little more decoration, a little more
right.
fun.
Well, that's why they produced it so rapidly, is, you know, they had all the running gear. They knew it was going to be a good vehicle.
Was there an early thought of having a front wheel drive?
Not in that day.
There's a story about Thalia again. Remembering that a front wheel drive they have had it in Germany, and asking them to send it over. Did it come through your area?
We had front wheel drive around 1964. Ford had built one here in the company.
Yeah.
Engineering had done that.
And that was it.
Right. But within our own company, and I remember seeing it. In fact, when I was in the Corporate Project Studios, and if I can dig the photograph out, I will, I did a 64 bird when I had the bird studio. No, it must have been about 61.
Yeah.
61, where we did a front-wheel drive model. And it was the first one that had been done in Ford Motor Company, and it was strictly a spin-off from a prototype that we had seen around Ford Motor Company here. And of course, General Motors, we heard GM was working on one with
right.
What the heck was the name of their outfit that used to make chains?
Not
Fisher. No. God, I can't think of it right now. But we're the first ones that, you know, came out with the Tornado.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That was 68, wasn't it? Or 66?
Yeah.
66. Right. They were working on it too. Well, the story we have is that there was a front wheel drive in Europe that later went on the Taunus, the Cardinal Taunus.
Yeah.
And there was some talk of using it on this spinoff,
which was going to be the Mustang?
Yeah, not true.
No, well, it may have been true, but it never got down to our level.
Your level, yeah.
Right, never.
It was quickly vetoed, though. Everybody said no.
Oh, yeah.
So they sent back to Europe and they used it on the tons.
Right.
Cardinal tons.
Engineering was very negative on any four-wheel.
Why was that?
Front wheel drive.
It took them years to get in there.
Yeah.
What was wrong with it?
I really don't know. You know. That's a good one you can ask Stu Pratt.
Okay, good.
No, no kidding. He'll probably give you a good answer.
I'll ask him. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Gordon Buick was a great advocate of that. In fact, he wanted us to make the Continental Mark II front wheel drive.
What happened?
You know.
Engineers threw
and it was just another case of we don't have the hardware. You know. And it's true, there's a hell of a lot of development time, you know, in a running gear, and you just don't bring it out tomorrow, really.
Of course, they had no real experience in front wheel
drive. No.
They weren't even sure if it would work properly.
Well, Gordon was a front wheel drive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So Gordon wanted to make it in, make the Mark II.
Right. That's in sitting around the table.
You're right, yeah, right.
I don't know if anybody ever took him seriously. Yeah. Where'd we get lost, Dave? We're up.
Well, we're a tangent. You're a head stylist in the Ford Corporate Project Studio from 61 to 66.
Okay.
And then you moved up to you moved over to a design manager in the same area. What other projects stick in your mind from that period?
Well,
period.
After I did the 65 Mustang.
Okay.
The one that I recall.
Was it much changed, by the way, or are you talking about the first one?
Talking about the first one.
Okay.
Right. The next project that I recall is doing a 64 Bird, because that was done, you know, well before. That was 62 or 63 that we did the Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, wait a minute, we would have been 2 years before, it must have been 62. That we did the 64 Bird.
Was this a radical change?
Yeah, it was a radical change.
What change?
The first Bird that Boyer and I worked on, the 61 Bird.
Bill Boyer.
And that was the one with the big round taillights.
I love those taillights.
Yeah.
I wish they'd kept them.
The 64 Bird was the one that we did the rectangular lights on.
They
went
bad.
Wall to wall, and I put sequential lights in it. Do you remember that?
Was that yours?
That was Gil Spears.
Gil Spears.
Spears' design.
Really?
And I swiped it, and I told him I was going to take it and put it on a bird.
What did he say?
And he said, great.
Huh? That's
and we did. And then they put it on the Cougar, too.
Yeah, I remember
that?
I drove a Cougar that year. Right. I thought they were great.
So I remember doing the 64 Bird, which was a new body from the 65.
Was
I mean, from the 61.
Was it deemed that the market called for a new rethinking of the Thunder Room.
From the round, very round 61.
Yeah, right.
To the more crisp 64.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I felt that it should be crisper, and we made it that way.
Yeah.
And we beat out our competition.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
Yeah. Then we did a new front end off of that one, because the original one was a very heavy front end, if you recall.
Yeah.
It's a lot of bumper.
Yeah, right.
And our next project was to get weight out of the front end because it was too damn heavy.
How'd you do that?
And we put a lot of sheet metal below the bumper and had a thinner blade bumper.
Uh-huh.
And I think we saved 400 pounds on that.
Wow.
400 pounds from the original design.
What did you substitute sheet metal for?
For heavy bumper stock.
Heavy bumper stock.
Right.
Just as strong and just as flexible.
Right. Didn't give quite the protection, but it was lighter. Let's see, from there, I think we went into the corporate projects De La Rosa's design office at that time, and that was from 66 to 67.
Why De La Rosa? Did he run it?
De La Rosa was the chief designer then.
Okay.
It was getting out of Hollerman's group over to De La Rosa's group. If this thing is correct, if my notes are correct. And the first project there was a, at that time, it was a Fort Torino.
Oh, yeah.
And this is where we put the first full soft fascia. You know, our fascias today, in other words, our GOP panels, the panel that holds the grill and the headlamps, that is somewhat flexible. Some of it's made out of filament wound, scrim fiberglass. It's a compound, a hard compound. But very similar to what's on a Corvette today, where if you smash the front end, the whole fascia goes soft. We have various parts on our cars now that, you know, parts that back up our bumpers.
Again, way ahead.
Yes, and we were working with, there's so many chemical companies. If it was DuPont or
Dow,
whatever
Dow
it was,
Corning.
I'd have to look up my notes to find out. But there again, it was similar material that we were using back in the interior studio for interior parts. We brought it up and used it on the exterior part.
GE has come up with something called Lexan in recent years. Was it 400 of that?
It's that type of material where it's indestructible, you know. It will bend out of shape without breaking.
DuPont had a Corfan.
Yeah, but they're all trade names just for the same product, you know. It's
vinyl.
About the same
flexible
product.
Flexible vinyl.
Yeah.
Flexible, breathable vinyl.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. See, there wasn't anything else absolutely memorable about that, maybe.
You're working in advanced studios now. What kind of a leader is De La Rosa? Is he inventive and creative?
De La Rosa was a very creative guy.
Was he?
Yeah. A damn good designer himself. I don't know a nice word for it.
What do you mean?
De La Rosa had the political savvy.
Okay.
All right.
He knew how to oil the machine.
Right, he knew how to oil the machine. Which I was probably so awed by.
You never really got around learning.
No. I just wasn't smart enough to catch on.
You should have sleep on it so fast.
Yeah. I don't know. Dolorosa's doing all right. Here created a lot of good stuff. Not much bad stuff that I recall. And he was absentee management.
That's what I heard.
Right. Is that a nice way to put it?
That's a good way to put it. Stuff like that.
Okay.
We have you up now to where you take over as design manager in the interior design office. Was that a new setup for the...
No, that was a production studio.
Production studio for the interior.
So. Yeah.
But still in Ford Division?
Still in Ford Division.
Yeah.
And in fact, that one, we did the... Panther instrument panel, which it has to this very day.
Now, the Panther was a code name for?
For the Ford.
For the, which one?
The present Ford that you have on the road today is called, within the company, it's called a Panther. The Crown Victoria.
Reported the platform.
Yeah. Right.
So the basic Crown Victoria, the large...
The large car.
The large car.
Is still in production today.
And you guys devised the Panther? Panther interior?
Yes. And we did the instrument panel, and the instrument panel was done by a designer called, his name is Doug Miller.
Doug Miller.
The cluster, the instrumentation, we changed colors and wood graining, but the whole thing is basically the same.
What year did he do that?
Well, that had to be, the car came out in what, 70 or 71?
Yeah, 70.
70. So that had to be then 1968, 69.
What was there about that design that made it so durable? This simplicity and the utility of it?
Well, it was perhaps ahead of its time when we did it.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's been a lasting design. The cluster speedometer hasn't changed. Maybe a few colors have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The appliques are the same.
The wood
graining has changed and it's turned colors.
When you say applique, which part do you mean?
The appliques are the glove box door. You know, the part between the registers, the AC registers that come out of the panel on either side of the instrument cluster.
Yeah.
But that's been it. It's really about the only thing that I recall out of doing seats and doing
meetings. Who was your exec there?
At that time, I don't really recall. It could have been Al Mueller.
Al Mueller.
Al Mueller. In fact, I think it was Al Mueller.
Where is Doug Miller now?
Doug Miller is retired.
Is he?
Yeah, he retired 2 years ago. He's got a place out at 39. It's out by Goodhart or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's got a place out there.
Does he drive a Crown Victoria so he can put his handiwork every day?
No. His father was, and thank you. He's driving a General Motors product.
What is it?
His dad was a comptroller for GM.
Oh, I see.
And believe it or not, he can get a car cheaper than we can buy it off our GM. So that's why he's driving a GM.
You ever see him?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
We go out to dinner about once a month.
Oh, good.
All right.
Does he think he's someone we should interview?
You know, it might be a good idea, really.
Keep it in mind the next time you see him.
Right. And see if you'd like to be. Because he's an interesting fellow. Now that's the...
Anybody who could come up with a design that lasts as long as that.
Right. Darn good detail, man.
Yeah. Right. That's apparently what did it.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy interior design work?
It's more buttons and bulbs.
Yeah.
It's very demanding. It is fun.
Is it?
In fact, I find all phases of design fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you got so many components to clear.
Yeah.
It's a
engineering nightmare.
Any feasibility nightmare.
Yep. Yeah. It really is. And everybody's very zealous of their space, like the air conditioning people.
Oh, really?
They want X numbers of inches and...
For their louvers and their...
Right.
Yeah.
And their ducting.
Ducting, yeah.
And the electrical component people want so much space for their relays.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio people want so many square inches for theirs. And the instrument panel has to be strong.
Right.
And it has to be installed with one guy in a vehicle. Multiple problems.
What infighting you must have had. It's like the cereal manufacturers fighting for shelf space in the supermarket.
Right. It is. Really.
Everybody's intriguing to get more space.
Yeah. It's something that you look at and you don't realize the amount of work it was in.
You don't. You really don't.
And yet you live with it every day, you know.
Demanding. You mentioned demanding. Beyond that, was it demanding? Because you had to fit so much in such a small space.
And keep your design. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Otherwise it would become diffuse and recognizable.
That's true.
But it was basically buttons and knobs.
Buttons and bows and knobs.
Yeah, right. So you really didn't mind getting out of that you were there 4 years.
That's right.
You moved back into advanced design. Now that sounds like it might be exciting.
No, that was in...
In
1971.
Late 71.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
They were probably trying to get rid of me and they didn't know what to do. And in that office, if I remember correctly, we did the Fairmont.
Okay, I want to hear about Fairmont.
Right.
That's one of the success stories of the decade, probably the only one. How'd it come about? Whose concept was it?
I'm trying to recall.
Your finger
tapping. Oh, it does.
Sorry about that. I know it's a...
Cross that out.
It's a neat, it's a neat.
Right.
Attention.
Right.
Did someone say, hey, we got to come up with a compact or a...
Well, that's when we were starting into smaller vehicles.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was simply a project.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And... very little fanfare, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was under Zocas. Okay.
Was it?
It's coming back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Bob Zocas.
Yeah, I think it was under Bob Zocas.
Z-O-K-A-S.
Bob is still there today.
Yeah.
It was a very tight package, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
The car was tight.
Yeah.
And...
do for a 77
It was Jim Arnold and myself. That's before Jim made Exec.
Uh-huh.
And we were doing two models. And we did two models, and the model I did won. Jim's lost.
Really?
And Jim made Exec.
You're kidding.
No.
And yours?
No, that's true.
Yours won the competition.
Right.
And became the
it Fox? Became the Fairmont.
Was that the Fox platform?
Yeah, the Fox platform.
Where was that developed, the Fox platform?
I don't really recall, but I think it was... the Mustang was developed off the Fox.
Was it?
Right.
Yeah, it became a workhorse platform for you.
It was a workhorse, and it later became a T-Bird.
Yeah.
That's when the latter part of Ford May's reign.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
he was turning out those Baroque monstrosities.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was really kicked off by our Fairmont and Zephyr.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
so that wasn't a real exciting time.
It wasn't
cars
exciting.
Really. an exciting car.
It was an exciting vehicle from a design standpoint. It's fairly utilitarian.
Right.
I still drive a 78, and my wife hates it.
Is that right?
Dumbest, ugliest cars.
No. Well, but I apologize for that.
No, but I think it's great because it did exactly what they wanted.
The design intent was.
Yeah.
It was to get a small package.
It's worked beautifully. I can't fault the fair amount of it. I still insist on driving because it works.
You know? Yeah.
And it looks good. When we get washed, it's so
But your wife hates it.
She's driven it for almost 10 years.
Is that right?
Well, no. She started driving.
Well, get her a new one. Yeah. I guess it's really the last of the kind of box of cars that we have. But it was quite smart, wouldn't it?
It sure was, and it's still good.
Yeah, and they took it and made a LTD out of it, a Ford LTD.
That's right. They
put new sheet metal on the front.
Used the same body, same
platform. Right, and it worked out real well with that sort of soft front end.
Yes, it did.
I thought they did a hell of a job.
Yeah. That was your basic design?
Right.
What happens when you win a design competition and the other guy gets promoted?
Well, I've wondered myself.
Is Arnold something of a politician also?
No, Jim is very low-key.
Best guy.
Southern gentleman. And, maybe I scream too much when I get people to get up here or something. But Jim never really says anything, and he really never did anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they made him an executive. Maybe that's what it takes. You don't do anything.
You just don't make waves.
Right. No, it's a terrible thing if Jim...
No.
Ever heard that, he'd feel bad.
We interviewed Jim one time.
Right. Pardon?
We interviewed Jim one time.
Yeah? Did you? He's a nice guy. He started off in a company.
Did he really?
Joe Orris tried to fire Jim Arnold.
What?
And Jim was working for me at the time. Because he was so low-key.
He wanted somebody who was more volatile like him.
Right.
Yeah.
And Jim at the time was having... somewhat of a hard time sketching, coming up with ideas, but the guy was talented and mechanically proficient. So I had him draw up the 1964 Lando bar that went on the roof of a T-Bird. And I says, Jim, I want a nice tight shop drawing that absolutely impeccable. And he got a whole week drawing his Lando bar. And when Joe started in on me the next week, what are you going to do with Arno, I said, come on over. Tomorrow take a look at the drawing. I says, you don't think this guy's got talent? And we went over and looked at the drawing. Joe confided a mistake in it. In fact, I don't think Joe really knew what a mistake was. But it was so beautifully done.
Yeah.
I says, will you get off my back now?
You knew it would catch or catch or as his imagination.
Right. And that was the end of it. He didn't bother me anymore, and he really didn't bother Jim anymore. He never did like Jim.
Who did he like?
I don't know. He liked himself.
Yeah, right. That's true. Well, the Fairmont was in spite of the fact that at the time, it seemed like just another. It was really quite. It saved the company in the late 70s, didn't it?
It did. Yeah.
They were going down the tubes, and here comes along this boxy, utilitarian but very classy-looking vehicle, and suddenly they're back. They got enough to tide them over until they can get something really good, really not good, but really different.
Yeah. Well, see, that was the. It seems as though whenever Ford Motor Company takes, say, a more or less of a proven undercarriage and puts a body on top of it, they get someplace. But when they start off all new, they seem to falter and fall on their face. And maybe that's, not enough R&D to begin with.
They don't do that many platforms, though, do they?
No.
How many platforms can you remember, basic platforms?
I really can't.
You mentioned the Panther.
Fox.
Falcon.
Falcon.
Bird was unique. Continental Mark II was unique. Fox ran all the way through to 70.
Right.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
And that carried the Mercury, all the Fords, the T-Bird, and that's why that T-Bird was so ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that platform.
Yeah.
Of course, that was Gene, too.
Yeah. Right.
Now, those cars that were that boxy, Gene did the T-Bird, and he did the Lincoln, which is a huge success today.
Yeah.
But that boxy son of a gun, the rest of the cars, those are really Gene Bourdonnais' car. He is really the cardboard box man.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You
for
know.
Some reason, he could never...
And long never. Front overhang.
Yeah, right.
You notice all his cars have got a long front overhang. The front end hangs over the front wheels and looks like they're going to fall over. In my opinion, maybe you never noticed it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Odd, very odd looking.
And I'd say that's on platforms I can remember.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't come out with new platforms for the 80s.
Well, Taurus.
Taurus is the newest one, yeah.
Yeah, Taurus is the newest.
The first new
platform.
The platform
is still going on with the, let's see, the Mustangs are still on a Fox platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's still
right.
a Fox.
Yeah.
And the Cougar is still a Fox.
Right.
No, Cougar is the Bird. The Bird is a modified Fox.
Modified Fox, yeah, so basically,
right.
yeah.
Yeah.
And how about the, the Taurus Sable is really the newest, doesn't
it? Taurus Sable is the newest.
Yes. And they'll
yeah.
use that for another 20 years.
Oh, hell yeah. That'll be on everything.
Yeah.
That'll be on your new Lincolns, the FN9,
mm-hmm.
EN25.
Yeah.
That'll go for another 10 years, you're
right.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you say R&D costs so much. They look and say, hey, can we just squeeze something on this?
Well, that's a trend today, really, in fact, companies, you know, more or less said, we're not going to buy all new running gear anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to start to build on what we have, and with automation, really, that's where it's going to go.
Is it?
Yeah. With all the automated fixtures for the floor pans,
mm-hmm.
it's so expensive to change them that the flexibility within the fixtures that they have in their automation, and with this new Unicide that is really stew fry,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
there can't be a hell of a lot of deviation.
They have changed all the equipment.
Right.
Adjust them.
So the inner structure will stay the same.
Uh-huh.
We'll keep designing new shells for them.
Yeah.
But basically, we the same damn range.
The flexibility is gone.
Right.
Is this a conscious decision?
Well, I think it is, simply because of the money that they've put in their automation.
Mm-hmm.
They have to stick to this type of thinking. That's why our flexibility to build variations of models is diminishing because of automation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the bottom line.
Yeah.
You're married to the bottom line.
Right, absolutely.
The you got out of interiors for a couple of years. You were involved in Ford and the T-Bird advanced vehicles, and UV compact. Any exciting in those years from 73 to 76 that stick out in your mind, moving around to a couple of new areas? Or was it just a reshuffle of the older areas?
It was just a reshuffle of the older areas, really.
Huh.
The Fairmont's the greatest thing that came out of that one.
Right.
And then we went on and in 76, I was put in the truck studio.
Now, well, how'd that come about? What happened there?
Another shift of personnel.
Mm-hmm. Did you not worked in trucks before?
No, I never worked in trucks before.
And this is, and the trucks no longer were the Siberia that they used to be.
Well, the company still considers it Siberia, yeah.
Really?
In fact, in, you know, most, I'd say most of the company looks down on the truck area.
Really?
Really, they're the biggest money makers that Ford Motor Company has got.
I never understood that.
But there isn't any glamour to it.
Oh, I see. It's workaday stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So Jack Telnack or Gene Bourdonnais or whoever's in charge never comes back to the truck station. And I found it a delightful place to work.
Tell us
because
about
of the fact that
you never had these people hanging over your shoulder.
Right.
What was it like? What was the reason you were reshuffled for various reasons, and suddenly what sort of work were you doing in the truck design office, truck and tractor?
Well, at that time we did have truck and tractor
together.
And yeah. The first project going in there was a whole new body.
Really? What year?
That was our 80 truck, which is the one with the slant headlamps.
Yeah.
You know.
Finally getting some exciting configurations.
Right. At that time, the truck studio was managed by absentee management. The execs were mostly. No, the exec designer was usually a guy that was going to retire. So they push us all retirees in that place.
Really?
And for a design manager, it's delightful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he's really his own exec.
Yeah.
And
who was that sort of person? See, was Najjar involved?
Najjar
was one of the latter ones. Yeah.
Najjar was the first one that I went to work for.
Yeah.
John was about to retire.
Yeah.
Jim Sippel, who was the exec, at that time, I don't know if they called him a super exec or what. But John was the exec, and I forget what they called him. Director.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So Sippel was the director. Sippel was ready to retire.
Yeah.
Sippel left. Johnny left after a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Spencer came in.
Oh, really? What did Spencer do? Ken Spencer?
Very little. Because he was getting ready to retire.
They were easing him out, too.
Right, and they were easing him out.
Yeah.
So I spent 9 years in there.
That's, that must be
all
nobody,
the vehicles.
Nobody looking over your shoulder. You were doing all the design.
Right.
What stands out? Are there some of the exciting projects that came to fruition out of it?
Well, we put a new front end on the CL9000, which is the cab over engine.
Oh, yeah.
Still
easy,
right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We did the new body for the F-Series truck.
Uh-huh.
And a new Bronco, Bronco 1.
That's right.
And
good sound.
Then we did the Ranger. And then we did the Bronco 2.
Was that, you know, when they always do the twos and they always downsize it.
Right.
Were you displeased at the way they really sort of trashed the Bronco 1, which is a good solid design?
Oh, it is, but the vehicle was just big, and at that time we were so impressed by the gas guzzler routine.
They said you had to have
that we need a small truck, and we knew Chevy was coming out with their
S10.
Right. And Capilongo at that time elected to go to a smaller truck, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way the Ranger was born, and that was simply an S. The Chevy fighter, really.
The
S-10
fighter.
Mm-hmm. And the Bronco 2 was a very inexpensive spinoff.
Oh, I see.
From that vehicle.
Well,
if you look at it,
yeah,
we're making over $5,000 on every Bronco 2, which at that time was the same profit margin that we were making on the Lincoln. Made money hand over fist.
Because there was no
They're very little tooling.
Tooling, you get your
front doors,
right,
a new roof, and a new quarter panel, and you got a vehicle. And a short little floor panel. So we made money like crazy on that.
Ranger, John remembers working on the early Ranger.
Yeah.
Did you work with him on that too?
Yeah. He wasn't there that long.
No, he wasn't there.
No. No. And John is a hell of a good exec. He could organize things.
And he delegates.
And he delegates.
That's good. Yeah, because he doesn't write
it. But at that time, Johnny's got so goddamn much money. All he was doing was watching his money. And getting himself set to go out. And I don't mind that.
No.
I don't mind that.
He paid it too.
Everybody did, really paid his dues. Yeah. But he would come out and ask 50 questions, you know.
Yeah.
Then I'd answer them. Then he'd go back. I wouldn't see him for a couple of days.
That's great.
But I love John.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
But he could drive the our engineering department just absolutely wild.
Right.
Well, he'd keep asking for comparisons to Chevy S10. To a Chevy 600 and get all sorts of goddamn no good projects, you know.
Yeah.
Really, that wouldn't really matter, you know.
You took all this shit.
Yeah.
They dumped it all on your department.
Yeah.
But you guys persevered. You came out with it. The trucks are saving the company.
Well, they sure as hell did save them.
Yeah.
And then also the Aerostar, which was pushed on us.
Tell us about that. I've heard conflicting stories.
Okay, well, the story with the Aerostar is that the Aerostar was done by Kopka and Kopka's group.
Of how long ago?
Of, well, let's see. We brought the thing out last year, so we worked on it in, 2 years earlier.
What about his antecedent? Is that a whole separate story, the Mini Mac?
Oh, yeah, we could go back further to Gil Spear on that one.
Yeah, why don't you?
All right.
I love you, that's
good. Ford Motor Company started looking at little mini vehicles and mini station wagons when Gil Spear was in charge of Advance, I'd say, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several vehicles built throughout the last 15 years. One of which was called a Mini Max, and it was a Spear vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And if you could compare the two, what Chrysler came out with is practically that vehicle.
How'd that happen?
Della Rosa took
it. Della Rosa did it again.
Right.
Yeah, took it with him. Yeah.
And Spurlick? The thing was planned. And Ford Motor Company, I'd say 10 years ago, and it is practically identical with their package. Spurlick took the package with him.
Was it Augie with these guys?
Right.
Because he'd been part of the development team, I think.
Yeah, he knew it from top to bottom.
Right.
He had it all.
Huh.
Well, this all leads up to the Aerostar.
Yeah, right.
And the Aerostar was also a spin-off of the Mini Max, only we want a garageable type of van. Our present van won't go in the garage, as
right.
You know, it's too tall.
Yeah.
Well, this was done by Kopka's group.
Which is? And, Advanced group?
Mark Kelly's the designer that designed the vehicle.
The Aerostar.
Now there's a guy you won't hear from either. Yeah.
What?
And that's probably a guy you should talk to. He's got a different outlook on Ford Motor Company. It's a little jaded.
Yeah.
But it would be good to talk to him.
I'd like to.
Mark Kelly. He's a younger man, but yet he's got another point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he did the vehicle.
He did.
And
in terms of
design. Engineering-wise, the vehicle was supposed to be 90% complete
in 5 minutes.
Feasibility.
Oh,
when it was turned over to the truck studio to develop.
Okay.
Here, this is an advanced group now.
Yeah.
Similar to what the Mustang, when I was at Ford Advance, the Mustang went from that studio, Mark did it, over to me.
Uh-huh.
All right? And
Mark,
at that
Mark,
time,
Mark, who?
Mark Kelly,
yeah.
Who worked for Kafka,
okay.
which is our advanced group
right.
in the design center today.
Yeah.
Okay. The vehicle was supposed to have been 99% engineered.
Hmm.
Oh, shit.
Really? What was wrong with it?
Nothing was engineered. When it came into our group, it was supposed to be 99% feasible. Engineering, it seems as though engineering just really didn't pay a hell of a lot of attention. They gave it a lot of lip service, but they never really engineered it until it got into the production studio. They're supposed to do preliminary engineering. They're doing studies.
Study, don't
they? Okay. We're out of time.
No,
we gotta go
on. There's a tape, that's what I'm talking about.